Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, April 28, 2017. Residents of Juba Town are wondering why tanks are rolling up and down the streets.
Last July, we didn't know what was happening. We only came to know after a lot has happened. It was only a meeting, but such kind of deployment were happening. All of a sudden, a few hours, the whole country went to full conflict.
And some refugees in northern Uganda say they have suffered in the hands of South Sudan's military.
Immediately, they started to beat me. This was in front of the mortuary. I sustained injuries on my eye, neck and arm as a result of the beating.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. It's been five straight days that Juba Town has looked like a war zone. Tanks and armored vehicles have been moving up and down in the streets, and troops have been deployed to strategic government institutions. Some residents of the capital call the presence of military personnel on the streets terrifying and wonder why the government has turned the city into a police state. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Juba.
Juba Town Mayor Stephen Wani Michael says the forces are deployed to prevent criminals from stealing and robbing residents at night.
Of course, they are carrying out their normal activities as usual, looking for those who are carrying unlawful guns and those who are carrying out criminal activities within the residential areas.
Residents say, for the most part, the town is calm, but the presence of the military personnel on the street with heavy machine guns is alarming. One resident of the Rock City residential area, who prefers to remain anonymous for fear of the government retaliation, says since the beginning of this week, there has been a heavy military presence on the street, and she cannot understand why. She says it is eerily reminiscent of what happened in July.
As a civilian, as a woman, up to now, I don't know why. I kept on asking myself. Last July, we didn't know what was happening. We only came to know after. A lot has happened. It was only a meeting, but such kind of deployment were happening. All of a sudden, after a few hours, the whole country went to full conflict.
Presidential spokesman Ateny Wek Ateny told reporters on Monday that the government deployed troops on the streets of Juba Town to prevent civil strike. Ateny told the East African weekly newspaper that Sudanese security were spreading rumors about a power struggle within the Kiir administration. Mayor Wani says residents should go about their activities and feel secure.
That deployed in order to protect them. And the tanks that they are talking about around the castle, these are the police, and these are the police of the Republic of South Sudan. They are meant to protect them.
Muniki resident Priscilla Achol drove through the town to pick her grandchild from Sacred Heart Nursery School in Juba. Speaking in Arabic, Achol says it is frightening, especially for children, to see soldiers carrying machine guns on the street.
I'm too afraid. Even this morning when I was bringing my grandchildren to school, around the roundabout of the parliament, we saw a heavy deployment there, and there is no one to tell us what is going on and why these forces are there. Many rumors are going on, but we don't know whom to believe.
Early this week, more than 10 civil society groups met in Juba and issued a statement appealing to the government to remove the forces from the streets of Juba. Rajab Muhandis, Executive Director for South Sudan Network for Democracy and Election, or SUNDE, read a statement on behalf of the civil society groups.
Immediate removal of all forces and war hardware from the streets of Juba in order to reduce public fear. The current deployment of forces contradicts the principles of peaceful resolution of conflicts, including the proposed national dialogue.
The South Sudan Civil Society Alliance issued a statement earlier this week urging the government to find a solution to country's economic crisis. The group said most South Sudanese are unable to buy food for their families across the country. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
South Sudanese from Pagiri County in the former Eastern Equatoria state who are now staying in Uganda's Adjumani district say some members of their community were forced to flee the country after being falsely accused of supporting rebels loyal to the former first Vice President Riek Machar. The refugees say security agents held suspects at military-run facilities under terrible conditions and some were even tortured. Simon Peter Apiku reports for VOA from Adjumani district in northern Uganda.
For security reasons, names have been changed to protect the identity of the refugees. Rosemary, a mother of five in her late 30s, says she was arrested in mid-December at Nimule Hospital. She was accused of shooting photographs of soldiers killed in a rebel attack earlier in the day along the Juba-Nimule Road. Speaking in her native Madi, Mary says the security agents rejected her explanation that she was actually visiting her sick aunt at the hospital.
Immediately, they started to beat me. This was in front of the mortuary. I sustained injuries on my eye, neck and arm as a result of the beating.
James Joseph, who also hails from Pagiri County, says he was incarcerated for several months on false charges. Also speaking in Madi, Joseph says the military was particularly brutal in its treatment of certain detainees.
I come a Barusi, a Jimalimule, Molwe Trubanga, Lolinayo.
I was arrested in my village and transferred to the military barracks in Nimule. I was not given food in the first week. During this period, they would bring us out blindfolded at odd hours at night and take us to locations we could not tell. We were beaten ruthlessly, and in my case, one of my testicles was smashed. These are some of the things our government does to its own people.
Mary says after 4 days at the detention center in Nimule, one night she was blindfolded, bundled into a vehicle, and driven off to a location she later found out was the notorious detention facility in Kerepe, where she had been told many suspects met their deaths. Mary says she was tortured here for some days, but her worst nightmare came when she was raped, an incident that left her extremely traumatized and pregnant.
The person in charge of the detainees, who also had the keys to the cells, was the one who raped me. He came with a knife and a rifle and threatened to kill me if I ever mentioned it.
Joseph says military and security operatives at the detention center in Nimule kept a couple of tools handy, which they never hesitated to utilize to extract confessions.
The detention facility had an assortment of torture tools. They will display a pistol, hammer, nails, razor blades, panga, knife, and ask detainees to either confess or choose any item from the collection they prefer to be used on them. In fact, the soldiers use these items regularly.
Paul Peter, a former employee of an international non-governmental organization operating in Imatong State, says he spent about a week at the Nimule facility after he was accused of supplying medicine and food to the rebels. Speaking in Madi, Peter says he was not given food for a few days, but was not physically tortured thanks to the intervention of his bosses and local authorities.
But a young man from Mugali, who was brought in after I arrived, was beaten severely. The soldiers sprinkled his body with drops of burning plastics, and he could not even lie down because of the injuries inflicted on his body.
Peter says he shared a small room with 32 other inmates, all rounded up for various concocted rebel-related charges. Mary says she was released last month after being held for more than 2 months at the facility in Kerepe. She says she is still undergoing treatment for external and internal injuries she sustained as a result of the torture.
I'm still suffering from the effects of the beatings. I need to have an X-ray done to determine the extent of the damage. Sometimes when I cough, I spit pus. I have a broken nose and there are injuries on my eye, ear, head and chest.
Peter says while some detainees died, others are eventually freed after their families pay unspecified amounts of cash to the military. He says he believes the military, in collaboration with an array of corrupt security organizations in Nimule, are using random arrests and detentions to generate income for themselves.
In my opinion, their primary objective for detaining people is money. They are frustrated because of delays in salaries. The other reason, I think, is because the soldiers are doing a lot of bad things and want to scare the local population into silence.
Joseph says these particularly brutal tactics, coupled with the burning and destruction of houses, was the main reason the people in Pagiri County fled South Sudan.
In fact, these are some of the reasons the majority of the Mari people left the country and preferred to live as refugees. The government has even destroyed their houses.
Joseph and Peter say they continue to experience nightmares, which they say is a side effect of the time they spent at the military detention facilities. On top of that, Mary is a devout Catholic and says she is struggling with her conscience. She must decide soon whether she will keep or get rid of the rapist's unborn child she is carrying. For VOA News, I am Simon Peter Piku in Adjumani District, Northern Uganda.
Sudanese refugees from Western and Southern Darfur who fled their homes due to fighting in Sudan are in dire need of urgent humanitarian help, according to a local group operating in Awil, which says hundreds of women and children are camping under trees at a UN compound there. Abraham Agod has the story for VOA in Awil.
Awil State Relief and Rehabilitation Commission and international humanitarian organizations visited Sudanese refugees displaced from their homes 7 years ago who had been residing in Raja and up until last July. That is when fighting broke out in Raja between the South Sudan Army and the rebels and they were pushed out. Brim Okage directs a local organization known as Koyom Sanitation and Hygiene Initiative.
We have more than 9 agencies. So all these organizations are here to assess the situation of this displaced person. Today, after their assessment, so we will get back their report. So we give them pressure to give them food. When somebody is hungry, he doesn't need to have a number.
Okage says his organization has reached out to the Darfur Traders Association and Muslim community in Awil, urging them to help the Sudanese refugees.
Each committee will supply them with food per week. So now they are making a rotation of giving them 2 bags of posho, 1 bag of rice, and 15 kilo of each ingredient. So that is how now they are surviving to wait for well food to come and assist them.
Busha Ali Suleiman, a mother of 3, says her husband was killed in Darfur before she and our children fled to South Sudan.
We left Raja for Barmayen. We went, but we could not find any place to live. The rain would fall, but we were left destroyed like that. The living conditions were not pleasing anyone. We left that place to Awil, here on foot. We camped here and could not get any support. A few humanitarian organizations which have been coming but returned once they register our name.
Dibaya Ibrahim is another Sudanese mother of 3 children in Awil who says there is no health care or education for Sudanese refugees in South Sudan.
The condition of our survival, education and health condition here is becoming very difficult. When the child becomes sick and you take to the hospital, just headaches, tablets can cost not less than 50 South Sudanese pound. Here we don't have a single pound to buy this.
Nura Homer says our kids are suffering from diseases like pneumonia and diarrhea. She is begging humanitarian organizations and South Sudanese officials to intervene.
The condition is really not good here because our children are now contracting many diseases. Now we stay on the floor without anything to use for cleaning. We don't have any ability to help ourselves unless humanitarian organization intervenes. If we are given some shelters, then it will be good because the rain are soon raining heavily.
Simon Molomolo, a nutritionist with Awili State Ministry of Health, says the government is planning to help the refugees.
We came out with the plan that we have to establish the mobile clinic so that they can be safe here in their location. We found that a lot of cases are here, especially diarrhea is a common, pneumonia is here also, and then malaria.
There has been no independent confirmation of the Sudanese refugees in desperate need of help in Awili from the UN agencies. It is also not immediately clear why the UNHCR was not involved in the field assessment carried out by aid agencies in Awili. For VOA News, I am Abraham Agoth reporting in Awili.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, will the Trump administration keep in place former President Obama's decision to ease sanctions on Sudan? We'll talk about that when we come back.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what are you looking forward to the most in the future?
I want to basically get money and a job, stable job, eh? In the future. That's what I'm looking forward for. And basically money and a house, and just I want to be better off than I am right now.
I should maybe have a good job where I can be able to feed myself, my relative, and so forth.
To be at peace in future, such that everybody can mind on his own business. They can just settle their families and also look about their personal hygiene and health.
My dream, which is to work with UN, yeah, it's been always my dream, and I know I will one day.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. As the six-month sanction review period nears its end in July, the United States will have to decide if it will keep former President Barack Obama's decision to ease some sanctions against Sudan. Members of the Congress had a second hearing on the sanctions this month, this time by the House Foreign Affairs Subcommittee on Africa. Panelists David Daitoni, director of Washington, D.C.-based Operations for Sudan Relief Fund, tells Ayen Bior he is in favor of sanctions but wants to extend Mr. Obama's executive orders for 180 days.
The corridor leads into Awil in South Sudan's Bahr Ghazal state from El Obeid in Sudan. And beginning as early as next week, the UN World Food Program is expecting to begin delivering food to hundreds of thousands of South Sudanese. Samantha Newport, a spokesperson for UN OCHA in Sudan, says the opening of the corridor couldn't have come at a better time.
We will have rain coming in a few weeks. So the idea is really to deliver as much food assistance, which is mainly sorghum, before the rain hit, which always affects the effectiveness of these road humanitarian corridors.
The World Food Program will deliver an additional 7,000 metric tons of sorghum into South Sudan, which will feed 540,000 people in the area. Since the beginning of the year, UN OCHA reports over 90,000 South Sudanese have sought refuge in Sudan. UN agencies say civilians are not only fleeing insecurity, but in many cases are leaving their homes in search of food.
Humanitarian corridors are often key in the delivery of life-saving assistance. And actually, in this case, it just makes a lot of sense from a logistics perspective as well to be transporting food from Sudan to South Sudan. It would be quicker. It's less costly than perhaps other corridors that link to Kenya or Uganda, for example.
Sudan is hosting nearly 400,000 South Sudanese refugees. UN OCHA says at least two-thirds of the population in South Sudan are in need of humanitarian assistance. Ayan Bior, VOA News, Washington.
Cervical cancer is preventable, yet it remains the most common cancer on the African continent. Senegal has one of the world's highest rates of the disease. The country's health officials hope to turn the tide with a nationwide campaign to vaccinate girls against the virus that causes cervical cancer. For VOA, Sophia Christensen has the story from Dakar.
In the Philippe Makiden Senghor Health Center on the outskirts of Dakar, women line up for a day of free breast and cervical cancer screenings. The event is run by young Senegalese volunteers from the non-profit Junior Chamber International. Sassi Ndiaye waits for her turn. At the age of 60, this will be her second cervical cancer test. She says, before we didn't know about this. I went through 8 pregnancies and never did a cervical cancer screening with my gynecologist. I only did it after my menopause. For comparison, in the United States, it is common for women of all ages to be screened for abnormal cervical cells every 1 to 3 years. In Dakar, gynecologist Muhammadu Mustafa Yad says by the time patients come to see him, their cervical cancer can be advanced. He says, at a later stage, recovery is painful and difficult. And more importantly, the prognosis is not good. This is why screening is so important. When you catch the cancer early, treatment is easier and much less expensive. In Senegal, cervical cancer screening normally costs around $60, which most women can't afford. And women may have to travel to get the test. Many clinics, even in Dakar, don't have the necessary equipment or laboratory resources to do the test. A video colposcope had to be lent to the Junior Chamber volunteers for the day of free screenings. But the arrival in Senegal of a vaccine that can prevent cervical cancer could help address these challenges. Cervical cancer is caused by certain strains of the human papillomavirus, a common sexually transmitted disease known as HPV that often has no visible symptoms. A vaccine against HPV has been in use in the United States and other parts of the developed world since 2006, but it has only recently arrived in Africa. In 2013, Senegal was among 10 African countries identified by the Gavi Alliance to pilot the vaccine. The nationwide rollout in Senegal follows a successful pilot program last year in 2 parts of the country. Ethiopia and Zimbabwe are also set to introduce the vaccine soon. Dr. Ousseynou Badiane is head of the immunization division for the Ministry of Health in Senegal.
L'introduction va se faire en deux phases. Donc, il y a la première année où on va faire la vaccination.
He says the aim is to first launch a mass vaccination campaign reaching over 800,000 girls by May 2018. After this, the vaccine will be routinely administered to all girls at the age of 9 as part of the country's routine immunization programs. New vaccines can be met with suspicion, so health practitioners are urging the government to also launch a public education campaign. Sophia Christensen for VOA News, Dakar.
Pope Francis is making a 2-day visit to Egypt intended to strengthen interfaith efforts in a region boiling with religious turmoil. Security was tight surrounding the visit Friday, but some locals say they are still nervous after Islamic State attacks on churches in recent weeks. VOA's Heather Murdock has more from Cairo.
As Pope Francis arrives Friday for his first visit to Egypt, security forces line the streets as the faithful gather, trying to catch a glimpse of the pontiff. The visit comes amid difficult times for Egyptian Coptic Christians, one of the largest and oldest minority groups in the Middle East. Early this month, more than 40 people were killed in 3 church attacks claimed by Islamic State militants. The Vatican refused to cancel the papal visit after the attacks, as well as the offer of an armored car. Some locals say they fear for the Pope's safety, while others see the visit going ahead as a sign of better times to come.
We were hoping the visit would be in a better situation, but we respect that he did not cancel. He knows that his message of peace and love will speak directly to the Egyptian people.
There are roughly 10 million Copts in Egypt, a nation of 90 million people, but the Christian population in the Middle East is in decline. In Syria and Iraq, Islamic State militants have driven out vast numbers of Christians in recent years. But in Egypt, Christians say discrimination usually comes in the form of economic and political disadvantages.
Many of our rights seem lost to us. We do not fill important positions in Egypt, and we face discrimination from authorities. We face so many obstacles and so much harassment.
Pope Francis is expected to visit Egyptian political and religious leaders, as well as celebrate Mass Saturday in Cairo Stadium. He has promised to contribute to interfaith efforts to promote religious tolerance in Egypt. Heather Murdock, VOA News, Cairo.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. It's been five consecutive days since tanks and armored vehicles have been rolling up and down the streets of Juba town. Some residents of the capital say it looks like a war zone and wonder what's going on. Juba town Mayor Stephen Wani Michael says the forces were deployed to prevent criminals from robbing people. Residents describe the sight of heavy military personnel in the streets as scary. One resident of the Rock City residential area says it is eerily reminiscent of what happened in July when fighting broke out between government forces and rebels and violence spread across the country. South Sudanese from Pajeri County and former Eastern Equatoria state, now staying in Uganda's Adjumani district, say some members of their community were forced to flee after being falsely accused of supporting rebels loyal to former First Vice President Riek Machar. They say security agents held the suspects at military-run facilities and some were tortured. A mother of five in her late 30s says she was arrested in mid-December at Nimule Hospital and accused of snapping photographs of soldiers killed in a rebel attack earlier in the day. She says the security agents rejected her explanation that she was visiting her sick aunt at the hospital and says she was beaten and that her neck, arm, and eye were injured. And finally, Sudanese refugees from western and southern Darfur who fled their homes due to fighting are said to be in dire need of urgent humanitarian help, and that's according to a local group operating in Awil, which says hundreds of women and children are camping under trees at a UN compound. Awil State Relief and Rehabilitation Commission and international humanitarian organizations visited South Sudanese refugees displaced and Sudanese refugees from their home 7 years ago who'd been residing in Raja up until last July. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
That's our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song Stay Safe by Prince Moses Lupai.
Earth is a killer, my people.
Ace is killer. My people, stay safe. Stay safe.
We've been listening to Prince Moses Lupai with the song Stay Safe. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We hope you have a safe, peaceful weekend. Join us on Monday for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Stay safe. Stay safe. Silimu battle. Ya baba.